Chapter 11. Science and Sensibility. Here, we identified XMRV nucleic acids in the peripheral blood mononuclear cells, PBMC, of 68 of 101, 67% of CFS patients, whereas only 8 of 218, 3.7% of regional healthy controls contained XMRV DNA. Furthermore, infectious virus was transmitted from activated PBMC as well as from purified B and T cell cultures and plasma derived from CFS patients by establishing a secondary infection in uninfected primary lymphocytes and indicator cell lines. Full-length sequencing revealed 99% homology with previously isolated strains of XMRV. These results were supported by the observation of type C retrovirus particles in patient PBMCs using transmission electron microscopy. Taken together, these data demonstrate the first direct isolation of infectious XMRV from humans and implicate a role for XMRV infection in the pathogenesis of CFS. The original abstract of the Science article, October 8, 2009. Otto von Bismarck once said, "No one should see how laws or sausages are made." In this century, Bismarck may have added scientific publications to that list. Tomaikovits' publication in the top journal Science certainly involved sausage factory antics, with some offcuts from her original article never reaching the public eye. To her, the decision over which passages were included in her team's published Science article called into question the stringency around protecting public health. She felt that the steps leading to the identification of a new retrovirus in ME/CFS patients were as important as the actual discovery and should be elucidated. People needed to know the why and the how to find out why these patients were so sick. So, in the July 13, 2009 version of her team's Science submission, which the referees approved for publication before some of it ended up on Science's cutting floor, her team detailed its rationale for seeking out the retrovirus in CFS. Chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS, is a multi-system disorder manifested by inflammatory sequelae including innate immune activation, antiviral enzyme, RNase L dysfunction, and low natural killer cell numbers and function. The recent discovery of the gamma retrovirus XMRV in men with familial prostate cancer harboring a reduced variant of RNase L prompted us to test the hypothesis that XMRV might be associated with CFS. The RNase L commonality was a crucial part of why the team had gone hunting a retrovirus in ME/CFS, an initial linkage between seemingly disparate men with bad prostate exams and fainéant-looking women wrinkling the paper of exam tables while doctors dismissed them with lines like, "Just try exercising more." Given the melee that followed the Science publication, it is notable that Mikovits and her co-authors also did launch into a detailed description of their sampling and testing methodology, as well as stressing their safeguards against contamination. To investigate possible routes of transmission, we next examined plasma from heparinized blood that had been frozen in liquid nitrogen within 1 hour of blood draw and shipped on dry ice to the NCI. To determine if infectious XMRV could be detected in plasma, we employed a virus isolation spinning protocol, which had previously been shown to greatly enhance the ability of retroviruses and Kaposi's sarcoma-associated herpes virus to infect different cell types in vitro. After co-culture with plasma, the LNCAP cells were subcultured for 2 to 4 passages. Both XMRV GP70 ENV and P30 GAG were abundantly expressed in 10 out of 12 plasmas, six of which are shown in Figure 4A. While the details about spinning protocols and liquid nitrogen may make non-scientist eyes glaze, they are important because liquid nitrogen can nearly fix something in time. The expedient freezing of samples in liquid nitrogen, a range between negative 346 and negative 320 degrees Fahrenheit, is known to preserve evidence of retroviral activity that could otherwise quickly degrade. So if the samples in Mikovits's study were properly processed after being taken, labs could also later use existing procedures to stimulate the replication of retroviruses to a high enough level for detection. This was, in part, why Mikovits's restructuring of Peterson's sampling methods had been imperative groundwork for their research. The team went on to explain. After 10 to 14 days, LNCAP cells tested positive by intracellular flow cytometry for the presence of XMRV P30 GAG proteins, figure 4B. We then confirmed cell-free transmission to the T-cell line SUPT1 by placing cultures of patient PBMC in the top of 0.22 micrometer transwells in six well plates. After 3 days, the transwells were removed and the SUPT1 cells were positive for XMRV GAG sequences by RT-PCR, figure 4C. We next showed secondary infection of cell-free virus could also be demonstrated, since virions from patients' activated PBMC were transmitted to normal CD4+ T cells, and from those T cells to secondary normal CD4+ T cells, figure 4D. These results strongly support routes of both cell-associated and cell-free transmission of XMRV in this patient population. Mikovits and her team then addressed the genetic identification of sequences of the retrovirus and its homology, or similarity, to known samples of XMRV, to demonstrate a direct linkage between this pathogen and the one in human prostate cancer samples, thus distinguishing it from its mouse counterpart and lab contamination. Sequences of viral isolates from the peripheral blood of CFS patients were highly homologous to the XMRV clones constructed from the patients with prostate cancer and share homologies with other well-documented gamma retroviruses. The previous passage is of vital importance. The sequences of virus they isolated were closely related to the XMRV clones, VP62, that Silverman had constructed. Mikovits and her team were comparing the sequences that they had taken from actual patients with XMRV clones. But these XMRV clones could be compared to a bad copy machine, producing a replicate, which was of poor quality and significantly different from the original. It wasn't just a matter of comparing apples and oranges. It was like comparing an apple to a Xerox of an apple. Mikovits would later argue that this was the critical mistake made by many researchers in their work. They were calling this synthesized XMRV clone the natural virus, keeping the standards for calling a match extremely narrow, and in the process missing anything that might be closely related. They then outlined how the detection of the virus in T and B lymphocytes made it consistent with the tropism, the growth or movement of a biological organism of a retrovirus. In addition, our demonstration that infectious virus is present in both T and B lymphocytes is consistent with the tropism of other well-documented targets of human retroviral infection. Other researchers had for decades studied similar retroviruses and their disease associations in animal models as retroviruses can cause both cancer and neurological disease in their animal hosts. Some of the symptoms in animals with retroviral infection look intriguingly like those in known human diseases, and the conditions have suggestive names such as retroviral spongiform polioencephalomyelopathy and simian-acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. The first sounds a little like myalgic encephalomyelitis, with a bit of the spongiform Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, or human mad cow disease, thrown in. The second, if one drops the simian, turns into acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, AIDS. Several retroviruses, such as the MULVs, mouse leukemia retroviruses, primate retroviruses, and HTLV-1, are not only associated with cancer, but also associated with neurological diseases. Investigation of the molecular mechanism of retroviral-induced neurodegeneration in rodent models revealed vascular and inflammatory changes mediated by cytokines and chemokines, and these changes were observed prior to any neurological pathology. Neurological maladies and upregulation of inflammatory cytokines and chemokines are some of the most commonly reported observations associated with CFS. The involvement of XMRV may account for some of these observations. Mouse and monkey retroviruses also induce inflammation and changes in blood flow, a correlative to the inflammatory markers Mikovits and her team had found in human patients, the measurable chemokines and cytokines. Retroviral involvement has long been suspected not only for CFS, but also for other neurological diseases such as multiple sclerosis, MS, and amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, ALS. McCormick et al. Recently explored the candidacy of XMRV in ALS. However, they did not find XMRV in the blood or CFS, cerebral spinal fluid, of the 25 ALS patients where reverse transcriptase, RT, was detected. In retroviral research, reverse transcriptase was a smoking gun, an indication that a retrovirus was on the scene. To deny the significance of reverse transcriptase in a disease, even if the retrovirus was yet to be determined, was much like ceasing police questioning after ruling out just one suspect in a crime. But a crime had been committed, and a suspect was still at large. While Mikovits and her team cautioned that the causality of XMRV in CFS is probable, but not definitive at this time, they left little doubt that the path of future research for CFS might resemble that of AIDS research, where antiretroviral treatment became the primary focus after HIV was found, and AIDS-associated cancers and opportunistic infections were addressed aggressively, but secondarily to the retrovirus. Retroviruses are strongly associated with malignant transformation and neurological disorders. The higher incidence of neoplasia has been associated with outbreaks of CFS. Investigation of the role of XMRV infection in cancer development of this population warrants further study. In HIV infection, co-infection with other pathogens, such as herpes viruses, contribute to the disease progression and outcome. Thus, the association of HHV6 and HHV7 with CFS. Although in this study, we found two CFS patients positive for XMRV, but negative for CMV, EBV, HHV6, and HHV7, may not be fortuitous, but a strong cofactor. The researchers' mention of the two herpes virus negative CFS patients would support the idea that herpes viruses were passengers and not drivers in ME/CFS. In AIDS, the presence of HIV opened the door to the bus, but pathogenic passengers were varied characters, bringing their own traits that might cause one patient's skin to bloom with purple lesions and another to have a throat lined with white thrush. Secondary pathogens in ME/CFS, or their reactivation after a period of dormancy, might also be enough to spur the replication of B and T cells as the vaccines did with children, leading the production of more B and T cell-embedded XMRV and then overwhelming the immune system. Mikovits believed that her team's revised submission of July 13, 2009 to Science had addressed the relevant concerns of the referees, hence their subsequent approval of the publication. But after Science more formally accepted the paper on August 31, 2009, its editors wanted a full one-third cut from the article. Mikovits did not have a pleasant experience working with the senior editor. She would email a question and wouldn't get an answer for weeks, and then be sent a caustic response along the lines of, "Oh, you're the worst writer I've ever seen. You've got all this jargon in there. Eliminate it. All we care about is the virology." What the senior editor considered chaff was the immunology and scientific precedent that gave background into hunting a retrovirus in ME/CFS. Mikovits felt every sentence buttressed the research, and with cuts, there were too many pieces missing. Even with the immunological data, the entire paper was less than 8.5 pages in length, double-spaced, not counting the supplemental material, which mostly contained references and pictures of gag sequences from gels, electron micrographs, other figures, and a description of the methods and materials used. Mikovits made the changes to the Science article, trying as best she could to preserve the most critical information. But while she edited it, she thought, given the 17 million people estimated to suffer from ME/CFS worldwide, the 1 in 100 children with autism, increased in 2013 to 1 in 50, not to mention the multitudes afflicted with multiple sclerosis and ALS, was it really too much to ask the world's leading scientists to read just 8.5 pages? Fortunately, although John Coffin later became Mikovits' fiercest critic, in that shining hour he was her champion, publishing supportive commentary in conjunction with her article in Science. After attending the meeting of July 22, 2009 at the National Cancer Institute, he understood the centrality of her research in the current scientific dialogue. His 7-paragraph article, co-authored by Jonathan Stoy, A New Virus for Old Diseases, was a clarion call to medical researchers about the appearance of a retrovirus in ME/CFS and its alarming implication for other diseases. Coffin seemed like a researcher wrestling with the results of new data, but sincerely concerned about the impact of the new information on millions of people with chronic disease. He described the results as showing about 2/3 of ME/CFS patients as testing positive for XMRV. Both laboratory and epidemiological studies are now needed to determine whether the virus has a causative role, not only in this disease, but perhaps in others as well. While Mikovits had cut what she considered critical parts of their paper at the editor's request, Coffin's article bolstered her research with excellent background on the history of the disease, the retrovirus, and its possible importance to further research. He recounted that the virus had first been detected 3 years earlier in a few prostate cancer patients, and had recently been discovered in about 1/4 of all prostate cancer biopsies. He also went on to say, "It has been isolated from both prostate cancer and chronic fatigue syndrome patients, and is similar to a group of endogenous murine leukemia viruses, MLVs, found in the genomes of inbred and related wild mice." Coffin had noted the extensive research into gamma retroviruses via animal studies, and accurately reported that 50 years of investigation into retroviruses had not shown a link to any human diseases other than HIV/AIDS and human T-cell leukemia virus. He then raised the point that retroviruses can become integrated in the DNA of an individual, passing from mother to child. Endogenous viruses, such as xenotropic MLV, arise when retroviruses infect germline cells. The integrated viral DNA, or provirus, is passed on to offspring as part of the host genome. Endogenous proviruses form a large part of the genetic complement of modern mammals, about 8% of the human genome, for example. Then Coffin got to the hot-button issues, transmission, and the possibility of lab contamination, which would consume so much of Mikovits's attention in the years to come. The propensity of xenotropic MLVs to infect rapidly dividing human cells has made it a common contaminant in cultured cells, particularly in human tumor cell lines. Coffin identified a theoretical danger posed by the retroviruses, which was their ability to infect germline cells, those passed from mother to child. He also explained that the retrovirus did not seem to present a real problem to mice because their cells generally lacked the proper receptors that allowed the retrovirus to gain entry. Just like mice, humans already harbored a large amount of genetic material, 8% according to the latest estimates, that appeared to be viral in origin, meaning that the genetic material of viruses had been fused with human DNA. While mice generally lacked the cellular receptors that would allow these viruses to enter the cell, humans were not so lucky. They had receptors that would allow these same viruses to gain entry into cells. It was known that these types of retroviruses could easily infect human cells cultured in a laboratory, especially cancer cells, since they were rapidly dividing cells. Given the propensity of these viruses to contaminate cell cultures, particularly of cancer cell lines, Coffin next attacked the issue of whether this new discovery might conceivably be the result of contamination. His opinion, in what seemed like a preemptive strike given the events to come, was no. There is more than 90% DNA sequence identity between XMRV and xenotropic MLV, and their biological properties are virtually indistinguishable, leaving little doubt that the former is derived from the latter by one or more cross-species transmission events. There are several lines of evidence that transmission happened in the outside world and was not a laboratory contaminant. While Coffin would later become the fiercest proponent of the idea that the XMRV findings were the result of contamination, it is revealing to read his own words at the time of the announcement of the discovery. It is clear that at this time, Coffin believed there were multiple lines of evidence showing this virus to be a threat to the public health, and he detailed them. One is that XMRVs from disparate locations and from both chronic fatigue syndrome and prostate cancer patients are nearly identical. The viral genomes differ by only a few nucleotides, whereas there are hundreds of sequence differences between XMRVs and xenotropic murine leukemia proviruses of laboratory mice. Other evidence includes the presence of XMRV and high amounts of antibodies to XMRV and other MLVs in chronic fatigue syndrome and prostate cancer patients. Coffin argued cogently that XMRV found in these human samples could not be a laboratory contaminant because of the pace of its evolutionary advancement. As a natural consequence of evolution, a virus needed to undergo significant changes to adapt to a new host, but these varied in mice and humans. There were hundreds of nucleotide sequence differences between the XMRV in the human population and similar retroviruses among mice, which implied a distinct evolutionary leap between species. Coffin also noted the presence of antibodies to XMRV. Human biological materials in a test tube do not generate antibodies. The production of antibodies can only take place in a living organism. Coffin stated that much was still unknown about XMRV, whether it was limited by geographic region, whether it was a consequence rather than a cause of an impaired immune system, and other concerns. We do not know how the virus is transmitted, and the suggestion, based on indirect evidence, that there is sexual transmission is premature. Given that infectious virus is present in plasma and in blood cells, bloodborne transmission is a possibility. Furthermore, we do not know the prevalence or distribution of this virus in either human or animal populations, and animal models for infection and pathogenesis are badly needed. Coffin then focused on some important attributes of XMRV, the near identity of viruses recovered from individuals in different diseases and in different geographic regions. This did not seem to bother him, as it meant XMRV was less like HIV and more like the lesser-known HTLVs. In this respect, XMRV more closely resembles human T-cell lymphotrophic viruses, HTLVs, isolated from the same geographic region. As in the case with HTLV, the lack of diversity implies that XMRV recently descended from a common ancestor, and that the number of replication cycles within one infected individual is limited. Genetic drift is an important concept. Among higher organisms, it's relatively simple. The more closely related organisms are, say two siblings, the greater the degree of genetic similarity. There are fewer genetic or nucleotide differences. However, if one selects a random human being from a country thousands of miles away from where one's ancestors originated, there will be more genetic or nucleotide differences, simply because so many generations have passed since early ancestors wandered out of Africa to fan out over the globe. As Mikovits had been thinking for some time, XMRV looked more like the human T-cell leukemia virus, HTLV, co-discovered by Frank Rossetti, and less like HIV. The lack of diversity among the XMRV isolated from patients meant it had, in all likelihood, crossed over into human beings in recent genetic history, and that it did not appear to go through many cycles of replication once established in a person, a trait that might help survival, since pathogens are often killed during a point in a replication cycle, which is why one class of AIDS drugs is called reverse transcriptase inhibitors. This might explain why before the 1934 epidemic among doctors and nurses at Los Angeles County General Hospital, this disease had never before been observed, and why autism seemingly emerged during a similar time frame. Mikovits later recalled how, when she showed the evidence of immune and other biological abnormalities in ME/CFS patients to a group of doctors at the Defeat Autism Now conference, DAN, in January of 2010, they had observed the similarities to their patient population and made the declaration, "We think autism is simply ME/CFS in kids." While this statement seemed to leap several fences, researchers such as Dr. Rich van Koninenberg had previously observed common methylation defects in both populations, as well as other overlaps, such as specific nutritional deficiencies, neurological hypersensitivities, and mitochondrial defects. Researcher Dr. Cecilia Giulivi from the University of California, Davis, whose work was reported in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, stated that children with mitochondrial diseases may present exercise intolerance, seizures, and cognitive decline, among other conditions. Many of these characteristics are shared by children with autism. Just as Dr. Sarah Myhill reported on dramatic mitochondria-based energy defects in ME/CFS patients as measured in blood, Giulivi and her team found in blood sampling that mitochondria from children with autism consumed far less oxygen than mitochondria from the group of control children, a sign of lowered mitochondrial activity. Myhill similarly found in her published research on ME/CFS patients that only one of the 71 patients overlaps the normal region of mitochondrial functioning. These parallel findings are significant when one understands that mitochondria are like gas stations for the tissues and organs, producing energetic fuel called ATP, and the heart and brain use up the largest percentage of this fuel, hence they are most vulnerable to mitochondrial defects and sometimes show the most obvious symptoms, such as neurological hypersensitivity or post-exertional fatigue. Underscoring the possibility that XMRV could be a ticking time bomb in massive numbers of people, Coffin ended his 2009 Science commentary discussing what Mikovits considered one of the most disturbing findings of their research, the prevalence of the retrovirus in the general population. About 4% of the healthy population showed evidence of having this virus. If these figures are borne out in larger studies, it would mean that perhaps 10 million people in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide are infected with a virus whose pathogenic potential for humans is still unknown. However, it is clear that closely related viruses cause a variety of major diseases, including cancer, in many other mammals. 10 million individuals in the United States and hundreds of millions worldwide might be infected with this virus. If the virus was hiding out in the B and T cells of the immune systems of people, that meant that any immune challenge, a fever, a cold, an accident, and yes, even a vaccination, might be enough to make the virus come out of its hiding place and rampage through the immune system. And it was clear that Coffin believed the implications might go far beyond prostate cancer and ME/CFS. Further study may reveal XMRV as a cause of more than one well-known old disease, with potentially important implications for diagnosis, prevention, and therapy. Mikovits thought Coffin's commentary elucidated the most important issues. The medical community agreed that closely related viruses were responsible for a variety of major diseases, and that it was possible that many more diseases would be found in association with XMRV. In the days leading up to October 8, 2009, patients in the ME/CFS community buzzed that Science was going to publish groundbreaking research on the illness. The news spread like wildfire, lighting up blogs and phone lines. Patients had grown wary of hope, yet knew that being represented in the hallowed pages of Science with auspicious backing seemed hugely promising. Patients with shifted circadian rhythms awoke early or just stayed up all night, and then October 8, 2009 dawned. The scientific community was looking at the largest retroviral threat to the world since HIV/AIDS.